Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in our community. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this next segment of our show, we're going to hear about ATN Access. So tell me a little bit about ATN Access.
Okay. We've been in business since 1987. We began providing full-time training in 1991. Our focus is assisting individuals with disabilities or significant learning or employment barriers in getting prepared for work or their educational goals. So we began as a program that was working strictly with individuals who were blind or low vision, and now we serve the whole spectrum of disabilities. We have some niche expertise in terms of computers and computer-assisted learning and learning disabilities and working with individuals on the autism spectrum.
So can you give me an overview of the services you provide to these individuals?
Okay, well, we serve a number of individuals in our literacy lab. And those learners right now are stem from individuals who are very basic in terms of the literacy skills that they're acquiring to those who are preparing for college or university. And we assist them in getting into their programs and getting their learning pathway met, and then follow up with assistance in terms of if they have employment goals and moving forward. We have a retail training program that provides people the customer services, the point of sales, the communication skills, training in the process. And we also run a grocery store that we use as a transitional training program. And individuals who, once they complete our program, need a little more support in terms of getting the confidence they need and getting the experience and the reference they need, will work for us in our grocery store for a while, and then we will support them in finding private sector employment. We work a lot with WSIB clients in terms of doing retraining and back-to-work kinds of preparation and work hardering. We have an employment resource center. We have a youth program where we have young people that come in and they spend 5 weeks in class and then a 10-week employment placement. And the wonderful thing about that is they're paid throughout. So it's developing employability skills, helping them to get started in their employment pathway. We celebrate at the end of that both if they find employment and if they go back to school and continue with their education.
So are there any challenges in delivering this work?
Of course there are. We work with a very diverse group of individuals, okay? Certainly many come in after having experienced a lot of failure in their life, so there is a lot of work to be done in terms of providing them support. We are working with more and more individuals with mental health issues, especially our young people. So sometimes their focus is diminished. They begin a program, they begin a process, and then for a number of different reasons, they drop out of the process in it, or we think they're rock stars and ready for employment, and they get into a job, and they panic, and things go wrong. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done sometimes, and sometimes it's just a matter of helping somebody get a good resume and practicing some interview skills. So it's a diverse kind of workplace.
So to be fair, those sorts of workplace challenges, the shift, could happen to anybody, really.
They absolutely could happen to anybody.
So,
and they do daily, right?
Yes. So to look at the converse side of things, has there been any success story that you'd like to share that stands out for you?
We have lots of success stories. We have many, many individuals who go through this process and find themselves working in a wonderful place. My board chair was one of our original clients, and he is legally blind and was part of our computer training program in the beginning. He is now the manager of the paratransit system in London. I have a staff person that was one of the very first individuals to be in our programs, our long-term training program at ATN. She then started working with ATN part-time. When she came, she had just been unsuccessful in her university career, very limited number of courses that she moved through. She now has a master's, and she is providing personal counseling services for our clients. We've got lots of success stories. And then there's the little ones, the student, the young person who has been in their parents' basement for 2 years because they lack confidence. They are experiencing depression and anxiety and issues around mental health issues. And they start in the program, and they're quiet and withdrawn, and they're scared. And by the end of the program, they're outgoing. They're confident, and they're employed, and they're looking to do work part-time and go back to college, and there's lots of success stories, absolutely.
So
I could go on for a long time here.
So if you could send any message about the need for these services, what would you say?
You know, the need has increased exponentially. And part of it is the spread of mental health issues and depression and anxiety and those kinds of things. And the other part of it is that more and more government, and I'm talking all government, focus on the end product. So they want the light touch individuals to be supported, so they get the numbers to talk about the success of their program. And programs like ATN provide long-term support. We work with individuals who have maybe a couple-year pathway to employment and or to college or their learning goals and kind of the process. But as long as they're moving ahead, we support and we work with them, and that's essential, because if these kind of services don't exist, there are a lot of people who are going to be left behind. And there's a skills shortage, so that would be such a silly waste in the process.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay, no problem. Thank you.
Of course. Next, my friends, we're going to hear from Vicky from the Blecher Wellesley Activity Center. So tell me a little bit about the Activity Center.
This is our 30th year, actually, and every year we grow, so we do a multitude of activities. We start around meal. We have two meals, two large, heart healthy meals a month. And we also have our free fresh produce project, which gives the members that want it, they register for it, a bag of about a week's worth of fresh produce to go home with. We do this at the end of the month because everybody we service is low income, lives in social housing on restricted budgets, whether that means they're on Ontario Work Welfare, ODSP, disability, or old age pension, and that's all they live on. So the most they live on is $1,300 a month, and that has to pay everything. So they live in social housing, which is it's a blessing and it's not, but it pays the rent. So they come to us, and at the end of the month, we give them this bag of produce to help them get over the hump, because at the end of the month, they've got very little in their fridge. So it's also a way to introduce them to seasonal fruits and vegetables that they can afford to purchase on their own later at a lesser price. It's a way to get them to try it. So we have other activities. We've taken them on trips, all sorts of things. Just whatever they ask for, we try and do it for them.
So for a person with a disability who might not have access to things like proper nutrition on account of the expense, as you mentioned, you're providing a means for them to just to fill that gap.
Hopefully. And we have on the Tuesday meal, the meals are the second Tuesday and the last Thursday of the month. On the Tuesday meal, we try and make it what we call our lunch and learn, where I have someone come in from a different organization or a public health nurse or a nutritionist, dietitian, whatever, whoever I can reach out to and bring in to speak to them on whatever the topic of the day might be, or if it's an organization about the services that they can provide them for free. Everything is free with our organization. There's no charges for anything.
So are there any challenges in delivering these programs?
Yes, getting the funding. For whatever reason, this government, whoever it is, I don't care, I'm not playing politics here, I don't care what party it is, seems to forget that this is an aging population. And the majority of funding that's out there goes for youth or for the arts. But we have an aging population, and they're forgotten, which is the reason, in part, why this program started, why I kicked it off so many years ago. But they're forgotten. If you look up grants, for instance, for seniors, you'll be shocked at how few there are as compared to youth in the arts.
So, in this way, I'm assuming there's no availability of funds for things like mobility equipment or...
No, I can't get anything for that. I would love to. I would love to get funds for hearing aids, eyeglasses, because as soon as you turn 65, you're toast. You lose, if you were on a disability prior to that, you lose everything. You lose, if you use a motorized, like a scooter, a disabled scooter, for access so you can get around, you lose getting that paid for. You lose getting any repairs paid for it. Being disabled myself, I use a scooter to get around. I've had heart disease and that, so I can't get around too well on my own 2 feet anymore. When I turn 65, I lose all of that. And you lose getting your glasses covered, and you lose getting your hearing aids covered, and you lose any dental work you need covered. You lose everything when you turn 65 and go on old age pension. And if you're just strictly on old age pension, you're getting about $1,300, maybe $50 a month. That's it. So, how do you get eyeglasses when you got to pay your rent and maybe a phone? People don't have cable anymore. Even I gave up my cable. I just can't afford it anymore.
So if you could send any message to our leaders about what needs to happen, what would you say?
There needs to be a larger amount of funding going out there. There needs to be grants on top of grants for seniors programming, because seniors programming is a large scope. Like you said, we could ask for appliances like wheelchairs and scooters or even just walkers and those sort of things that are the less cost. But we can't do that because there's absolutely nothing there, nothing. Even just help like with the things that we do, bringing in people to talk to them about nutrition and trying, like we had a gentleman come in and teach about balcony gardening because it's a way that they can eat healthier vegetables that they've done themselves. So there's no cost to it except for a bit of soil. So there's just, they really, really need to open up their eyes and look at our aging population. Quite honestly, I don't know where their heads are. Talk about in the sand.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd
sure.
be great. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Are you a new or returning student at the university? Looking for a creative outlet that incorporates music and fun? Why not volunteer at CJAM FM? Volunteering isn't hard. All you need are a pair of headphones and the enthusiasm to learn. So grab some friends and email programcjam@gmail.com or come on down to the station. We're located in the basement of the CAW Student Center on the UWIN campus. And tune into CJAM anytime on the UWinsor app or online at www.cjam.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Vicki Mayer from ATN Access, and we heard a little bit about the Blecher-Wellesley Activity Center. What's the latest in terms of the elections in regards to people with disabilities and what they can expect?
Well, we've, again, for the seventh election in a row in Ontario since 1995, mounted a nonpartisan campaign. We're not trying to elect or defeat anyone. We're trying to get the strongest commitments on accessibility for people with disabilities from all the parties. So what we've done is we've surveyed the parties. We gave them all a list of the commitments we need, got the answers they've given us, posted them online and letting everybody know where they stand. But that's not all. I'm going to summarize them in a moment, but where some parties have promised less, we're trying to get their candidates to promise more. So our goal isn't elect or defeat any particular party. We're ready to work with whatever party wins, but we'd like to get the strongest commitments from all the parties. So what have we done? We've recognized that 2018 is a pivotal election in Ontario for 1.9 million Ontarians with disabilities. And that's because in 2005, all the parties unanimously voted to pass the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act. It requires the provincial government to lead Ontario to become fully accessible to all people with disabilities by 2025. It's now 2018. We're 6.5 years away from that deadline. We are behind schedule. The next provincial government, the one we elect on June 7th, is going to have really the last chance of either getting us on schedule or making it impossible to meet that schedule. So we've asked the parties a list of commitments. If they gave those commitments, it would get us on schedule. If they don't, we got a problem. Pardon me, we got a problem. So what have the parties said? Well, let me give them in order. The party that's given the most commitments, really supported everything we've asked for, is the Green Party. Of course, they have no seats in the legislature, but they are running candidates everywhere. Just behind them, and the party that gave the next most substantial commitments, is the New Democratic Party, which didn't give all the commitments we sought, but certainly has given a good number of them. And is among the three parties that have seats in the legislature right now, is the party that's given the most commitments, clearly and by far. So. Next to them, and running quite behind, are the Liberals. The Liberals, commendably, are the party that promised to and did bring in the AODA in 2005, did a good job of getting the start on implementing it, but in more recent years have flagged both on its enforcement and on its implementation. They've given some commitments, but clearly less than the New Democrats, and certainly nowhere near what we need. And then in finally, behind the Liberals and behind all the other parties are the Conservatives. Doug Ford wrote us saying he supports the aims of the Disabilities Act, and he acknowledges a range of the barriers and problems we face. But he doesn't promise any concrete action beyond telling us that they will work with us and they'll discuss with us what needs to be done. So it's a it's clearly the least. And his letter of commitment in a number of places looks like it's copy and pasted from the 2014 letter that we got from Tim Hudak during the 2014 election.
So, what are the priorities in terms of the commitments? What are you most looking for?
We don't sort of say this one's more important than that, but a number of the core things we start with is, are you committed to the legislation? Are you promising not to cut anything in the legislation or in gains we've made to date? We want to make sure the next government not only moves forward, but doesn't move backwards at all. It's important to note that in the 2014 election, when she was running for leadership of the Liberal Party, Kathleen Wynne promised in 2012 that she wouldn't cut back on any of her gains, but in 2016 her government did. They reduced protections in the customer service accessibility standard. They broke their the premier's promise on that score. But the first is, we don't want to lose any gains. And the next thing we've said is, will you make sure you don't use public money to ever create or perpetuate any barriers against people with disabilities? Pardon my sniffle. And that's an important commitment we seek, because right now the government has been creating barriers against people with disabilities. And something we've released that's gotten a lot of attention this election that illustrates this, I encourage your listeners to check this out. Back a couple of weeks ago, we released a new video on YouTube. I'll give you the search terms in a minute so you know where to find it. And in that video, we went in with our camera, and we depicted new barriers created with taxpayers' money in new public transit stations in Toronto and in recently renovated ones. So this is not, we're not talking about old construction. We're talking about new construction. And we document over and over how, despite commitments of accessibility, our money was used to create new barriers against people with disabilities. If you want to see this video, I encourage people to go to YouTube and just search on AODA and Public Transit and Ontario. And you'll see, again, pardon my sniffling, I got hay fever. What you'll see are two versions, a 16-minute version and a 30-minute version. We are excited that video has gotten coverage on television, radio, and in the newspaper. And in its first 12 days online, it got over 2,000 views, which is a pretty impressive milestone to hit in such a short amount of time for a community group like us. Like, now, again, our goal is not, and I want to make it clear, is not that we're encouraging people to vote for one party or against one party. We're encouraging people to get to their candidates from any of the parties and get the candidates to promise more. If they're a candidate from a party that's promised less, ask them, the candidates, to exceed what their leader did. Say, hey, if you get elected, are you going to press your own government to do more? Will you promise that you will press to ensure that they won't use our money to create new barriers? Will you promise that you won't, that if you get elected and you're in government, that you will press your government not to cut any of our gains? That you will commit your government, that you will press your government to ensure we get back on schedule for full accessibility by 2025? Those are the kinds of things we're asking, because it's sort of a bottom-up approach. We want to get the candidates helping lead their leaders.
like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. I'm wondering, folks, how do our leaders let it get this bad? How is it they can put a value on one group of people in society over another, or use public funds to create barriers for people with disabilities? Aren't people with disabilities part of the public? It's a pretty obvious conclusion that a country is made of everybody. Everyone within her borders is someone who counts. Everyone is someone entitled to a little consideration. No matter who wins in the election, it is simply a matter of at least making the effort. You're not always going to find a universal solution. You're not always going to make everybody happy. But given the option between giving it your all and solving some of the problems, or doing nothing, worrying about your bottom line, and just patting yourself on the back, saying how great you are, I would take the option of at least trying to serve my people. Those in power are elected for a single reason, and it is not to hold on to their jobs. They are elected to provide services and opportunities to better what is to come. The promise of the AODA is to make everything as accessible as possible by 2025. Some people may view this goal differently, but we have to make progress. We have to at least try. And the issue of the aging population is certainly a valid one. A person who's quote-unquote fully functional right now might not always have that advantage. They might not always be able to make use of their own transportation. They may need a better option. But if we're cutting our own nose off here, we're not investing in the future. We're saying what we've done is good enough. Let's leave it at that. But is it really good enough? Take a look at things like what David described, the Toronto subway incidents. How can it be people with disabilities are denied the opportunity to freely move about a city? Fact is, it's not just hurting them. Their dignity, their self-respect, their belief in their right to access. It's also bad from an economic standpoint. If they can't get to a business, they're not going to use that business, are they? Yes, online might be an option, but the fact is, a person with a disability has just as much right to go into a store, say, I want to make a purchase, as anyone else. When it comes to what Vicky described as the issues of not having access to mobility equipment or proper nutrition, how can we be so short-sighted? How can we look at these people who have lived a long, strong, courageous life, dealing with whatever obstacles, coming through, saying, I'm alive. I am a person with a disability, and I lived past 65. I have potential. I can still give something to this world, even if it's just wisdom. How can we just say, well, you live too long, that's the end of you? That's not how it works. People are living longer. People deserve the same access and consideration, no matter where they're from, what they believe, how they move, how they speak, how they think. Age, geographic location should play no role in assessing whether a person should be included. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.